DW Africa Link.
The Nigerian economy has been subsidized for many years, including fuel, education, and electricity. This podcast will focus on fuel subsidies in Nigeria and Ghana, since they are an indispensable commodity in the daily lives of citizens in these two countries. While the concept of subsidy itself is noble, its administration in Nigeria has been plagued with severe allegations of corruption and mismanagement. Recently, the fuel topic seems to be the biggest in Nigeria. But why? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Nigeria's President Bola Ahmed Tinubu's decision to end fuel subsidies triggered a backlash, and for the past year and months since Tinubu's off-the-cuff announcement to slash fuel subsidies put an end to the government program that has kept the price of petroleum products low in the country for years. Many Nigerians are unhappy and now worried about their livelihood. So what next for Nigeria, Africa's largest economy? Dr. Alassane Usman, working with Nigeria's Federal Inland Revenue Service, and DW correspondent Shehu Salmanu are here to discuss more on this. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me, and welcome to Africa Link. Now, I'll start with you, Dr. Usman. Can you just give us a brief overview of what exactly is happening in Nigeria? Why is there so much discussion in terms of petroleum products?
There are two fundamental issues. Many Nigerians doesn't get it right. In my own view, fuel is an important and indispensable commodity, not only in Nigeria, in every other country. However, most of the hardship that we are experiencing now in Nigeria is not caused by the removal or ending of the fuel subsidy. If you can just look at it, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu introduced two policies at the same time. That is, first, to end the fuel subsidy, and secondly, to plot the Nigerian currency, that is Naira, to allow market to determine the value of Naira. This has led to the depreciation of Naira significantly. And actually, even the price of fuel in Nigeria is determined by the value of Naira in international market. Because mostly we are importing those PMS into Nigeria and we are using a foreign currency. President Bola Ahmed Tinubu came onto the board. The value of Naira to $1 is 400 Naira to $1. Now it's about 1,600. So that depreciation is affecting the livelihood of Nigeria more than even the removal of the fuel subsidy. Hadn't been the value of Naira is stable, the price of PMS in Nigeria would not reach its current status. So in my own view, the main cause of hardship in Nigeria is the depreciation of Naira, not the removal of the fuel subsidy. That is in my own view, and this is the fact.
All right, but we see a lot of topics, a lot of stories, a lot of reports from Nigeria in terms of fuel queues. There is no fuel. Fuel is expensive. And many Nigerians are blaming the removal of fuel subsidies that it has affected them. But has the removal of fuel subsidies affected government revenue in any way? And has there been any additional revenue being allocated or utilized across sectors?
So, there is no direct answer for this because of two factors. Firstly, there is a larger or significant allegation of fraud within the regime of the fuel subsidy. So actually, to know the actual landing cost of PMS in Nigeria is not a joke, because there is no transparency and accountability in the importation of the PMS. There are so many allegations that some people are the imported price of the PMS and even the volume. Because if you look at it, when President Bola Ahmed Tinubu came onto board, the daily consumption of fuel in Nigeria is about 25 to 30 million liters per day. But now NNPC are claiming that Nigerians are consuming 70 million liters of PMS daily. So these are some of the things that we have to look at it. And secondly, actually, removal of the subsidy. Because up to now, they are claiming, there are some claims by ESPA that there are still subsidy. So removal of the subsidy has affected the government revenue. Because for the first 2 years before the coming of President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, NNPC are contributing nothing into the federation account. They are claiming that they are using the money to finance the subsidy. So now the money is coming directly into the federation account. But however, there is an increase in the government revenue, but still there is a problem that people cannot see the impact, because almost all states in Nigeria, except few, and even the federal government, they are indebted by a foreign debt. And they are using foreign currency, particularly US dollar, to service those debts. So let's assume that a state government or a federal government is supposed to use $1 million monthly to service a foreign debt. When the value of Naira to US dollar is 400 Naira, when the President Bola Ahmed came into board. So that it means that monthly, that government will use 400 million Naira to service foreign debt. But now Naira has depreciated to 1,600 per dollar. That means that government has to secure 1,600 Naira, 400 times of the previous status to service that debt. That means even if there's an increment of the revenue coming to that government as a result of the removal of that subsidy, servicing of foreign debt will consume that revenue. So people will not see significant impact on their livelihood as a result of that removal of the foreign subsidy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Shehu, you are our reporter on the ground there, and Dr. Usman says that fuel subsidy removal is really not the problem, but the depreciation of the Naira. But as you're doing your reportings and also seeing a lot of people queuing for fuel and what is happening in Nigeria, how significant is the impact of the fuel subsidy removal?
People cannot eat three times a day, pay the school fees, and also transportation is also an issue. The reaction of the people, all Nigerians, is full of bad comments, hunger, cost of living, and even calling for protests.
Now, Dr. Usman, back to you. You know, you mentioned something that Nigerians are actually blaming the wrong reason, which is fuel subsidy removal. The problem is the Naira. But do you also think the government's communication has been effective in explaining to its citizens exactly what is happening with the situation?
Firstly, let me make one clarification. The removal of subsidy is partly because of the hardship. But majorly, the major cause of the hardship or present hardship in Nigeria is the depreciation of Naira. Many people are wrongly accusing false subsidy. If you look at it, when they remove the subsidy, the price of PMS at that time is 500 Naira. So now, if you look at it, there is a little stability in the price of crude oil international market. So what are the factors that are driving the cost of the PMS now up to more than 1,000 Naira? That is depreciation of Naira. And the government communication to the public may not yield the desired result, because there is a problem. There is no trust between the government and the citizens. Even when the government are saying the truth, because of past experience, there is no trust between the government and the citizen.
But do you think the government has plans probably to redirect subsidy savings towards social welfare programs, so maybe people can at least survive? People need food, people need clothing, children need to go to school. And how is the success, if any, of those social welfare programs are they being measured?
You know, one of the functions of government in our economy is to solve economic problems, whether micro or macro, or pretend to. Actually, in my own view now, the government is just pretending. They don't have the economic muscles to provide those relief to Nigerians at now, because they are facing so many problems, especially that debt servicing is consuming more than 70% of government revenue. So the government has little to do, but they are just pretending, and they are buying time so that they can see maybe if there's an improvement in the economy, they can do something. If you look at it, all the measures that they are taking now, it's like a putting the cart before the horse. If they want to, because subsidy is a regime and it's a policy. So you have to design how to maintain that policy, how to implement it before you can even embark on that project. So now they embark on the project without a proper plan. It's now they are talking about CNG, they are talking about relief, they are talking about this and that. And up to now, even the CNG is not available in most of the states. Only the people that are even enjoying the CNG, I don't think they
what
are even
PNG?
Up to the compressed natural gas that they are saying is cheaper than the PMS. It's actually cheaper. But people to access this is a problem. The government is supposed to make that CNG available first before they can even implement that subsidy removal. But they failed to do that. And when they depreciate the value of Naira, based on the promise of IMF and World Bank, they said that the value of Naira will appreciate after 6 months. But what people are saying is that the value of Naira keep depreciation up to February this year. Now there is a little stability, but already the damage has already been done. So what most citizens are expecting from the government is to recover the value of Naira. If the value of Naira can be recovered by 50%, I'm telling you that the price of most commodities in Nigeria will reduce by more than 50%. The main factor that is driving the cost of production in Nigeria is depreciation of Naira, because most of those industries are using dollar to import raw materials. If you look at the industries, they are using diesel, not PMS. Most of the transportation means of transporting food and other things in Nigeria, they are using diesel, not PMS. So the higher price of PMS should not affect the cost of production and should not affect the transportation means of essential products. Most people that are using PMS are using for local transportation, that is carrying people, not goods and not goods. So people are getting it wrong. In my own view, and this is the fact, the main cause of our hardship now, the main cause is the depreciation of Naira, actually. Mm-hmm.
But things could have changed, right, Dr. Usman, with the fact that Aliko Dangote's refinery started selling fuel. Can you tell us more about that? What's happening?
So people are hoping so. But if you look at what is happening between the NNPCL and the Aliko Dangote, all people hope now dashed. So there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of corruption. And there are a lot of inaccountability and lack of transparency in that downstream and the mainstream sector of the federal sector of Nigeria.
So, but why does the NNPC look like or sound like they are unhappy with Aliko Dangote's refinery?
It's not only NNPC. Almost all people that are in oil industry, they are not happy with it, because the Dangote refinery, Dangote viewed the refinery as a business as usual. But most people, that NNPC, that importation of crude oil, they are getting billions of Naira through fraud and other means as a result of that implication. Apart from that, most of the oil marketers, they have invested billions of Naira in that implication. They build farm tanks and other things in the port so that they will continue importing PMS into Nigeria. So with the arrival of Dangote refinery, it does mean all those things will stop. And you know, when people are getting something, when something comes to stop it, they have to fight it first. So what I believe, since Nigerians are behind Dangote refinery and Dangote Limited, with time, the Nigerian people will win. But those people will not surrender easily, because they will continue fighting the refinery, because they are not happy with it, because they are thinking that Dangote refinery is a means of supporting their means of livelihood and income.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alassane Usman, working with Nigeria's Federal Inland Revenue Service, and our correspondent, Shehu Salmanu. We really appreciate.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, at the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. In March 2023, the Ghana National Petroleum Authority, NPA, also took significant regulatory steps, including removing fuel subsidies, which it said was to maintain stability within the country's downstream sector. The NPA introduced fuel caps to intervene and manage market volatility within the oil and gas industry. So how did Ghana do it, and what lessons can Nigeria learn? Duncan Amoa, Chamber of Petroleum Consumers in Ghana. He's also the Executive Secretary, is here to give us some answers.
Since July 2015, the country Ghana had to take a decision to cancel all forms of fuel subsidies and move to a policy regime known as the price liberalization or deregulation policy, which meant that the Ghanaian people would now have to pay for petroleum products for what the actual price is on the international market. This was done largely to save the state the issue of financial drag, where the fuel importing system or petroleum importers would often have to submit their claims for verification and payment by the state for whatever subsidies that had been contributed. This clearly was leaving in its wake a lot of debts that the state would now have to look for taxes or look for loans to be able to offset. What I can confirm is that after that particular decision to fully deregulate the market, the Ghanaian authorities have not had to go back to look for monies now to pay for what you would call fuel subsidies. And so the petroleum market in Ghana particularly has become a very robust one, such that whatever you put in here, you must be able to attain what they call full cost recovery plus your margins or markups. And that experience has contributed largely to petroleum security. You don't have a situation where people have to queue for fuel in Ghana, because what the price is what is sold for on the market without government interference. And so unlike what pertained before the full rollout of the deregulation program, where government through the finance ministry used to set petroleum prices, the current market allows the market players to now set their prices every 2 weeks, twice within a month. There's a pricing window where the individual oil marketing companies are able to adjust or set their prices commensurate to what international markets price movements dictate. And then again, what the local currency position also is. So what we can simply advise other African, markets to look at is to move off that, parenting situation where the state would now have to augment petroleum consumed such that the people would not have to pay realistic prices for petroleum products, and that there's always a backlog of money that we call subsidies that would have to be paid for by the mother state after the petroleum products have been consumed. We were happy when we heard that other African countries are also moving towards that regime where they no longer have to burden their governments with subsidies that they would now have to look for monies to pay. But introducing that, a few things would also have to come to play. You would need a robust downstream system that has very active players who are able and capable of financing the product without governmental interference in any shape or form. If you have that kind of a system, then you probably can be able to wean the government off ultimate control of what the people pay and what they don't accumulate by way of subsidies. And then you are able to have a free-flowing system that guarantees that even if international market prices, IMP, were to move to $1,000 a metric ton for any of the products, the system is robust, is able to adapt and adjust accordingly, and that the people would understand the need to be able to pay more to consume petroleum products without waiting on the state for subsidy interventions.
Yeah. Now, Duncan, from what you're saying, it looks like the impact on consumers as well as the result of the policy in Ghana was a positive one. Now, I know you've been following the situation in Nigeria. What mistakes do you think Nigeria has made because Nigerians seem unhappy?
I think for a long time, the Nigerian, people were made to believe that, the state has a fiduciary duty to protect them, to absorb costs of their consumption, and that they would probably need to be subsidized for, lifestyle choices. I have said on a number of occasions that public transportation systems are a necessary factor in our part of the world to be able to cushion the people who do not have, the poor, and then again, for those who also have and are able to consume privately. So if you are taking off subsidies, we would have expected the Nigerian government to probably be a bit more proactive with buses, find ways to curtail the unnecessary traffic situation so that people can get to and from one place to the other in real time without having to drive themselves. For those who choose to drive, within the same space, if they have to pay relatively more for fuel, you would have been able to shield at least the poor who do not have as much disposable income, such that they do not have to bear the brunt of, the removal. Even in Ghana, there was a bit of a pushback where some people felt it wasn't proper and the state should have control ultimately for what fuel costs at the pumps. But those pushbacks are expected, except that the state would have to also plan and ensure that there are buses available. And these buses would probably be able to reduce the cost of transportation for goods and services. That is in place, and the people understood that if you decide to drive yourself to and from one place or the other, that's a luxury that you may have to pay for because the state is no longer in a very comfortable position to absorb subsidy costs. But I am not sure that one education was done properly to explain to the people how subsidy programs hurt their own economies and would leave their own economies badly exposed every time, because what you consume today will have to be paid for tomorrow. That would mean that your state would never be able to plan, because there's always something coming up that they would need to take the same taxes they collect from you to pay for. That education, I'm not sure, has gone down well for the people to be able to embrace a new regime, a post-subsidy regime, where they can probably adjust accordingly. And then again, the public transportation system, I am not sure, is one that has been that improved to give them new buses, to ensure there's a traffic flow where you probably need to block some of the streets from, commuting both ways. If you have to do a single lane in order to be able to allow traffic to flow so that people can get to and fro in real time. These are things you would need to consider to roll out a post-subsidy program, but I'm not sure the education nor the infrastructure needed was something that authorities did consider beyond just taking off the subsidy and telling the people to deal with it. That's why I'm seeing a lot of pushbacks with the Nigerian system.
Great lessons there for the neighboring country, Nigeria, from Ghana's Executive Secretary for the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers, Duncan Amoah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Josie.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community. Your feedback and participation makes this podcast what it is. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and it's bye for now.
DW News.
Hello, I'm Johann Brockschmidt with Africa Link News. Nigeria's president, Bola Tinubu, says he wants debt forgiveness for Nigeria and other developing countries. He addressed world leaders during the UN General Assembly in New York, highlighting that countries of the global south cannot make any meaningful economic progress without concessions and a review of their current debt burden. Tinubu hopes that the upcoming Pact for the Future plan of the UN is going to address at least some of the economic challenges of developing countries. Israel has intercepted a missile fired at Tel Aviv by the Hezbollah. It is the first time that Hezbollah launched a missile at the coastal city. The warhead was reportedly targeting Mossad's intelligence base, Israel's intelligence agency. This comes just days after Israeli strikes killed more than 500 people in Lebanon in military attacks, which the IDF says targeted key Hezbollah positions and infrastructure. Experts say this development could result in further escalation of the situation and warn about a full-out war. This is the news bulletin on Africa Link, brought to you by DW. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reportedly wants to reveal a victory plan to US President Joe Biden during a meeting between the two leaders tomorrow. The Ukrainian president hopes to secure financial support and guarantees for his country before Biden is due to leave the White House. Zelensky addressed the UN Security Council yesterday.
One day in this hall, it will surely be said that Russia's war against Ukraine has ended, not frozen, not paused, not forgotten, truly ended.
The Kremlin reacted by saying that forcing Russia into peace would be a fatal mistake, which will bear consequences. Zambia's president, Hakainde Hichilema, has suspended three of his constitutional court judges. The government cited judicial misconduct and political interference for the decision. In 2016, the three judges had dismissed Hichilema's petition challenging the election victory of the former president, Edgar Lungu. They also took part in a ruling that allowed Lungu to run for president again 3 years ago, despite him having served two maximum terms already. Critics say, however, that the president's involvement in the removal of judges compromises the independence of the judiciary. Hichilema and Lungu are both expected to run for president in 2026. And finally, two-time Olympic marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge has announced that he will not compete in the next Olympics. The former record holder will, however, still be in LA for the Games in 2028 and encourage people to run, he said. The Kenyan will be 43 years old when the next Olympics start. In Paris this year, he already had to give up halfway through the marathon due to back pain. In 2019, the famous runner became the first person to run a marathon in under 2 hours. For more news, please visit us on dw.com. Thank you for tuning in. I am Johann Brockschmidt.
for mind.